Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Ever wanted to make your own podcast or shows? Today, you'll know how to make your own home studio. Welcome to Know How. I'm Ayaz Akhtar. This is Twit's how-to show where you give you a fun tech project. And today, we're going to go on to a field trip to Los Angeles and visit Tom Merritt's home studio. And we're going to show you everything it takes to put together a home studio. What we see here is a wild Tom Merritt in his natural environment. What we're going to do is we're going to try to approach it. I'm going to try the hello approach. It's been known to work before. Let's go over there. Hello.
The hell are you doing here?
I figured, you know, we've got a lot of emails from a lot of our viewers on Know How. They're like, hey, you know, Tom Merritt moved to LA. He's got his home studio. They want to know how to do the same thing. So that's what I'm doing here. I seem to have broken in. I have dog treats, so I got in.
Ayaz, right?
Yes. Oh, if I had a Skype window, you'd...
I recognize you, from Skype. So, no, what's going on?
Okay, so you moved down here and you had to set up your home studio. What were the things you were looking for when you were setting this whole place up?
Well, the biggest concern I had was bandwidth. Because going over Skype, we know, is a perilous journey for many people. So the very first thing I started up on was, even when we were researching homes, when I found out my wife had a job down here, we're going to move here, what's the best internet connection I can get? I lucked out that living near her work puts us in a Verizon Fios neighborhood. And Verizon Fios Business allows a 300 megabit per second down, 65 megabit per second up connection.
I hate you. Right. 350
I hate myself.
350 down, 65 up.
300 down, 65 up.
So that means that even if you have a bad day, you're probably getting at least 10 up, which is insane.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and it's actually been pretty consistently delivered. Every time I do a speed test, it's within a couple of megabits per second of what it should be.
Yeah, for tech news today, that's really great for our audio, and the video looks fantastic. What about your video setup?
Yeah, so then, okay, once I ran the Ethernet cable in here, because hard line connection is important, nice long Ethernet cable into a Mac Mini. That was Leo's suggestion. So we just got a Mac Mini off the shelf at the Apple Store with the Fusion Drive. Go into that to get the Skype machine going. And then for video, I actually started with this camera right here. This is a Canon HB30. It's the one I had. I was using this for when I would Skype in for things occasionally from home up in San Rafael.
This looks really familiar. I used to have the HB20. Did this do you did a FireWire out with this?
Yeah, this only has FireWire. It actually it has an HDDV port on the back, but it didn't work very well. FireWire was actually the best way to go. So I went FireWire into the Mac Mini, and that's how I did the first couple weeks. And people were noticing, like, your image seems washed out. It's not a very high resolution. So I think 720 was the best we could get out of it. So eventually we got a Canon G10, with an HDMI out, so I could go full 1080i. However, I did have to get a Blackmagic Intensity Extreme. I found one. They list at $299. I found one for just a little over $200. And I take that HDMI into the Intensity Extreme, and then that attaches by Thunderbolt to the Mac Mini.
So what kind of resolution are you getting out of this camera compared to the old one?
Oh, a lot better. The old one was 720, and frankly, I don't even think I was getting 720. I think it was more like 480. This is getting 1080i. So it's I, it's not P, but that is plenty good enough to look good over the Skype.
So we've got our camera, we've got your mic set up. How exactly are you set up with your mic? Now, are you using a crazy mixer, or are you using something else?
You know what? I've got the Heil PR40, which is the same mics we use in the Twit Studio. Mm-hmm. I've had this for years. I love this mic. This is going into what is called a Icicle from the company Blue. The Icicle is a XLR to USB adapter. And I got that for Christmas, actually, from my sister-in-law, because I had asked for it. And I wanted an easy way to, when I was on the go, to be able to plug a mic directly into my laptop. But when I got here, when I first plugged in my Mackie mixer, which is what I'd been using in San Rafael, I realized, oh, you know, I'm going to have to redo all of the EQ settings, all the bass and everything. So I'm like, well, I'll just use the Icicle temporarily. And it's turned out it works fine. So I actually haven't gone back to plugging in the Mackie, even though it works fine as well.
Yeah, the Mackie mixer is a USB mixer. It's a bit overkill for just one person doing a podcast.
Yeah, no, the reason I got the Mackie mixer was for doing multiple people. So when Veronica Belmont and I go to do Sword and Laser out in the field audio, we use that so that I can have both of us on mics and our guests in the field. It's kind of big for that, but it's not too big to carry in a suitcase. But yeah, here sitting alone, the Icicle worked great.
So we've got a camera, we've got audio. You're going to need lighting. You can't just be sitting here in the dark room or look kind of crazy.
Right.
What'd you end up doing?
I ended up crying for a long time and then realized, oh, wait a minute, Brent Bai lives down here in Los Angeles. So yeah, we got Brent to come over and hang some lights and make it look super professional. So I have much better lighting than I could have done myself.
Brent Bai, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's running that camera.
Oh, he's the guy behind the camera, but he also did the Twitch studio lights.
Yes, that's right.
All that setup for months, they were trying to, okay, let's sit over here, get the light set up. So Brent did this setup, so it's very similar to what we got in our studio in Petaluma.
Yeah, essentially it's a Kino Flow and a couple of backlights here, and then he put some nice homemade LED lights to give a little depth on the fireplace.
Right. Oh, cool. I guess we should go and talk to Brent now.
Yeah, don't ask me anything more about lighting. That's all I know.
Let's get Brent in here.
Hello, Iaz.
Brent, it's good to see you.
Good to see you.
We'll see you in a bit. Brent Bai, mm-hmm. Can you tell the people exactly what you do for a living? That's the first thing. Because then they'll be like, who's this guy?
Well, it's kind of the rare blend of camera and lighting. Mm-hmm. I did lighting for 15 years, and then I switched to camera. And so
They're just directly connected.
Yeah. So, all right. But in this situation, this is very common. There's a lot of people that need to. They'll have cameras. They want to do a home setup. They'll podcasting whatever they're doing. Very common need. And people think camera, but they don't think lighting. So this is kind of becoming a specialty, is going around and doing new media setups for people's home studios, corporate, all kinds of people.
So when you came into the space, what's the first thing you started doing? Did you just start scoping out the environment, trying to figure out how to block out light? What were you doing?
The space is the first thing to consider for anybody. You know, wherever your setup's going to be, Tom chose his desk and he has his space. And we decided the brick was going to be kind of a throw to the brick house. Mm-hmm. So we needed to isolate that angle of view. And we had to consider, first of all, there's blinds and there's windows and there's going to be ambient light. And so we talked about time of day. We talked about the angle that we're going to see from the camera, what kind of camera that is. The first camera that was offered was going to be on a monitor in front of him, which is going to be just a webcam, which is generally really wide angle view. And when he set that up at first, you saw way off of the brick. All the way into the blinds here, you saw a plug on one side, and then you saw onto a desk on the other side. So just too big of an angle of view. What you need is a camera that's capable of zooming in and having a closer angle of view.
Yeah, I think Tom showed that off a couple of times when we were doing TNT. Mm-hmm. He showed the wider cam. People were shocked to see this whole wall wasn't bricks. Right. It was just this fireplace because it's such a nice, tight shot. Mm-hmm. It just seems like this background goes on forever, but it's actually just the way it's framed. Right. The camera makes a huge difference right there.
Yeah, we really are splitting the very hairs of just the white painted brick on either side is right into there. So, and there's considerations like what on your viewing monitor, are you actually seeing a crop view or the full view? Sometimes a stream will get, you'll see more. That's a consideration to think about. You connect a camera to a Skype or other software that's going to be pushing out to a stream, and you might see more or less. That's a consideration. But the big thing is, first, pick that angle of view, and then start to consider changes of light. So many people want to have a big window directly behind them is the worst thing you could do, because you're going to be a silhouette. You're going to have to use a lot of light to compete with sunlight outside. So having a window off to the side might be a consideration, but then the light is going to change the day with clouds, with sun conditions, the time of year, time of day. So we just decided to close all the blinds, and most studios will do this. Most setups, you'll just say, take the daylight changing factor out of it, and then that way you have a starting point. So then you're in the dark.
I've done a bunch of podcasts before. I have this great window next to me, and as the show continues, the shadow starts creeping across my face, and it's, or a big light glare. You definitely want to block out all those things, because otherwise you look like two-face.
Oh, yeah.
Effectively.
Full sun is a bad idea.
It's a crazy thing. You're looking for a space, looking for a house, and you're like, I want all this natural light. Yeah, and then you're like, you come into your studio space, black it all out, because you want to have your own lights, your artificial lights, lighting the actual subject, right?
Yeah. You're just going to start with... Everyone will think three-point lighting, right? I hear this all the time.
It's in all the books, amateur video. They're like three-point lights. You got your key, your fill, and your backlight, right? That's what they do now, right?
Yeah,
professional?
No, nobody does.
Nobody does.
Nobody
that
does
anymore.
Three-point. That was at a time when people used pretty much exclusively hard light because you had slower camera film speeds.
What do you mean hard light?
Hard light is a bulb, something that is basically a small light source. Hard light is going to be any light bulb, and then the intensities get brighter and brighter and brighter, but they still stay a smaller source. So you're talking about even something as big as a 10,000 watt or 5,000 watt light. It's backed away a little bit further, and it's going to cast a shadow on the face, and you're going to get a hard shadow from whichever direction the light is coming from.
Okay.
So what's happened in contemporary photography, videography, shooting movies, TV, everything, is they'll use larger light sources, and that's generally diffusion. So diffusion is a paper material. It's fire retardant, and it has specific grades of density, so it lets more or less light through it.
But that's that stuff that looks like wax paper.
Exactly.
But this stuff can actually handle a lot more heat, and it's built for lights being hit up against it all day, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it is heat tolerant, and it is tougher for handling it over and over and over. But the key to all of it is the fact that you don't just have, say, a light bulb. If you put a light bulb 5 feet away from you, you turn it on, even though it's a soft light bulb or something like that. It's a small light source. And the further it gets from you, just like the sun is in the day is just a point source, even though it's very bright, it's going to make hard shadows on your face, which is not flattering. So we bring a large diffusion, and then we put light into it, whether it's fluorescence, whether it's LEDs, whether it's conventional old things like tungsten or incandescent lights. It's about filling a large diffusion source and getting that close.
So you don't have to use two separate lights for key and fill. You could use one large light. You're diffusing that light. As it's soft, you're not worried about harsh shadows and everything. So you're getting a nice soft light on the subject. What about behind the subject? I mean, because you want them to be separate from the background, right?
Well, the background is part of that. So the background should have some light, or you need to actually light it. And we'll talk about that in a second. But really, in a three-point lighting setup, you have your key light is going to be your main light source. Generally, that'll be off to one side, and then your nose shadow would fall off. And this is people mimicking painters like Rembrandt, the Dutch masters, and even before that, the Italian masters. They were painting dimension with shading. And so by taking a light and setting it off to the side, you're creating shadows on the face. That's what all classic painters started doing. And then we mimic that nowadays with two-dimensional camera images. We need to do the same thing with lights to create dimension and shape. So a key light would create a shadow on this way. And then sometimes it was too harsh of a shadow. So that was what the job of the fill light was, to be a lower intensity to kind of fill in those darker areas. But that'll actually create a subtle shadow that goes the other direction. Way. Then you introduce a backlight. And that's pretty standard because the backlight is supposed to cut you out of generally a darker background. That's classic three-point. Nobody really does a lot of that anymore. So what we do here, what we've done at the Brick House, what I've done here for Tom, most contemporary lighting setups will be a large key light source. So that, you know, right now we're being keyed, both of us, by a 4 foot by 1 foot essentially light source with some fluorescent tubes behind it. That is keying us plus filling us in. We don't have dark shadows under here as much because the source is so large. The light source itself comes across and creates the general shadows, but then the size of it creates the fill. So one light essentially does a key and a fill at the same time. People don't really discuss it by that. They would call it a single key source, but really it's acting as a fill for itself because it is larger than just a little point source.
Right? So put Tom back and start to test out what a practical setup's like right now?
Yeah, absolutely. What we're looking at, though, is this is kind of the interview thing. So this is not actually Tom's lighting setup. So that would be great to get him in here, and we'll switch to what his actual setup is.
Let's mess with some lights, and you're going to see some weird and interesting things about Tom Merritt's face. So we should get Tom back into here. Hey, Tom, you get over here. We need to light for something.
Let me return. This is our interview setup. So when Tom comes in, let me return this to what his setup actually is.
Okay.
So we can bring Tom in.
Let's get Tom in here. I'm going to take a look behind the camera to see what happens when you mess with this lighting setup, Brent.
Now, the backlights for Tom are these two. These are actually LEDs. It's an array of five LEDs. And each of these lights, they're like $100 each or something like that. And so they're kind of a point source light. So if you see on Tom, as you're looking there, you'll see this is one on one side in the camera from where you're looking at Ayaz. And then on the other side, this is the other one here. And it's just not a large enough light source to really cover an edge on somebody, the side of their face, on both sides of it. Really, all you would get is one hair light. So it's nicer to double it up on both sides of that.
So why do we need to see Tom's hair so well?
That is to separate from the background.
Okay.
And right now, what we're seeing is kind of what we dealt with when we came in here at first. The first time I sat down with Tom, this background just kind of had some ambient light from the house coming into it. And so once we got the angle of view, and we picked exactly what you're seeing in the camera now, we got our framing, we have our background, we're able to zoom in on the camera and isolate exactly what we wanted to see, only what we wanted to see, then we start dealing with the lighting. So I generally start with the backlights because you want to rig them. It's kind of particular, the angle. They're generally at a 45-degree angle, a certain distance. We're dealing with certain beams we had to rig to. That's always a concern, is what you're actually mounting to. So then I looked at the background, and this lamp right here is kind of mimicking what we dealt with the very first day. We kind of had some ambient window spill coming in the daytime. So if we turn that off, we kind of had nothing, but we separated him from the backlight there.
So right now we got Tom lit pretty well.
Right.
His hair's popping from the background. The background's totally black.
But we're dealing with a different key light. So I'm going to turn off our interview key light.
We're going to turn off some more lights. And now Tom, just his hair is lit up, still standing up in the background.
Right. So this is strictly backlights only.
Okay.
There's nothing else going on right here. We have backlights only. There's two of them. This is the one point source. We're doing one side. And we're doing another point source here. If I block out one of them, you'll kind of see how just one light is not really going to do the job. There is diffusion on these, but that's to help out. So this is just a general, what's called a hard rim edge backlight, right? Then we introduced a key light. This is very important, the angle of this as well.
It's a key light up here.
This key light previously was balanced to daylight. And it does take a minute for it to come up to speed. It's going to take about a minute for it to get a little bit brighter, a little bit brighter. But now we start to see how particular it is. If Tom were to look up to the key light and then look down directly to the camera, at a certain point you lose the glint out of their eyes. So the angle of the key light is very important. You could just go directly above a camera, but then you have a very flat looking light, and you will get a reflection, meaning a specular dot in the eye. It kind of helps bring attention to the audience when you can see the dot in the eye.
So people can connect to the performer better when they can see that.
The eyes are the window to the soul,
okay.
They say, yes. So we
shouldn't wear glasses, though.
We like to do that. What happens in TV is you have ellipsoidal long throw lights, and so a big stage where the lights are 20 feet up, you don't get a lot of that. You'll get, that just happens to be that they have to throw lights so far that you're just going to get the raccoon eyes, and that's just what happens in TV. But in these closer environments, you can bring the key light closer, down, and you can get a little glint. And what you're doing is trying to get just a little bit of the what they call the beauty butterfly shadow under the nose for fashion photography. They take the idea of a classic painter's Rembrandt-style light, which is off to the side and causes the nose shadow to create this triangle shape, right, which is opposite over here. And you just take that and you go frontal. So this key light is directly in front of Tom, above his eye line, above the camera. We're getting a little bit of shadow under here. And the size of the diffusion that it's going through kind of helps us fill it in. It's a little bit more of a shadow there. What I chose to do is correct and take out some of the darkness below here with the camera setting. I have a little bit of wiggle room with the gain, so we're going to do that next. But now that our key light is up full, this is kind of our base, but again, this looks really dark, because there's nothing in the background other than a little bit of spill coming back from the key light is doing a little bit of, you see in the background how the key light, it's very critical where the head shadow is falling off directly behind him. This is the shadow right next to him. So all these things are very particular. The angle, the intensity, the proximity to the person, those three things are the main deal. It's the size of the source, the intensity of the source, and then the angle of the source as it reflects the camera.
So what it looks like, looking through the camera, you can hardly even tell that there are bricks behind him. It looks like Tom's just really well lit and he's in a void. So that's not going to do. I mean, what do you do about that background?
So that was the very first thing we considered, was framing the background. Now we know what we have to light. And what I did at first was we had this effect of we had just a little bit of flat light spilling on it previously. And it starts to bring it up, and again, this is one of these compact fluorescents that takes a while to come up to speed. But we didn't like that as much, so we decided to turn that off, and then what I did was I make these customized... So you can see that LED strips in the back here, and then also going up. And if I dim those up and down, and you look in Tom's camera, this is without, and this is with. So this kind of gives us a little dimension in the back, and this allowed Tom to take some little bits and tchotchkes and things and spread them out, that personal items or things or the picture of the family. That's historic photo right there. This is the actual Merritts. And that gives the dimension. So this whole base setup is simple. We have a single key light source. We have a double backlight. And then we have the background.
Yeah, looking through the camera right now, this looks like the shot that people should be familiar with if you watch Tech News Today. Yeah, right there. You can see Tom talking to a microphone. But normally you'd be able to hear him. But now you can see him very, very nicely. And he's popping from the background. Looks really good.
So Ayaz, why don't we switch back to our interview? If you can turn on the key light and come join us.
Let's
talk about the whole setup here, whatever details were left. I know there were some questions about as this evolved. Right?
There was a very big question that popped up from some of the Tech News Today audience. A lot of folks thought that Tom had keyed in his background for some reason.
Well, he's not really here.
He seems to be here.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, obviously we're showing that this is really here. What is the effect that people were seeing that they thought, oh, that's got to be a green screen. He's got to be keying out the background.
The camera that he showed us earlier was the HV30, right? And there it is. So the HV30 has a different chipset inside of it. The chip is smaller, much less resolution.
This is the sensor?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And it's going to be 720 by 480, whereas a full-size HD chip in the camera that you have now is a full 1920 by 1080.
Okay.
So this camera, that's the first bit. And then the HD signal, the SD signal, was meant to go to standard television monitors that have rectangle pixels instead of square. So all those things, this actual camera, the signal that comes out of this goes down the firewire. When you see it, what was happening is that everyone was cutting between Tom and you in the studio. You're on HD cameras, Tom was on this SD camera, right? So what happened is that inherently you're seeing a little bit softer of an image. There's no possible way for this camera to compete with the resolution of the cameras that you were on in the brick house, right? So that's the first thing. You're mixing resolutions. Then the next major thing was that previously we had a daylight balanced key light on Tom, and we had, what he had is these track lights up here, and the track lights were just doing kind of a tungsten incandescent, really warm, orangish light.
So you got an orange light there, a bluish light in the front. Okay.
Well, basically, the white point, he looked normal.
Okay.
But the background looked very red and orange. And with the combination of the camera having a different resolution, it looked a little soft, so it makes it look kind of fake. It cuts to you and you're crisp and clean, and then it cuts to Tom and he's a little bit fuzzy, and then it's a totally different whacked out color behind him. And that's when we talk about these backlights. So these edge lights cut him out, and then people just kind of equate that to a bad key from a bad movie. Because when you have extra backlights, that was the trick back in the day. Terrible green screen.
You'd make sure there's lots of light that way, so the separation between the subject and the green screen. And so the thing is, to get this actual lighting, this edge lighting you had on Tom, that's what people were thinking was causing this whole pseudo. This wasn't a green screen effect.
It's just
a fake.
It's the perfect storm of three things. This camera was lower resolution.
Mm-hmm.
The color temperature was warm in the background, and he looked like a normal skin tone, so it didn't match. It looked like a bad composite. And then the giveaway, what they thought was the giveaway, is the fact that we had this backlight. It was cutting him out. And it was a white point, so it looked correct. So it just looked like a bad composite.
But the thing is, you want to have lights behind your subjects, so you have that edge lighting. It's something that's normal. It's not just a green screen trick. It's an actual thing that you want to have.
I think that's why it's so important to do a balance of color temperatures. You know, settings and cameras, you want to go to a manual setting and know what you're doing. You want to know that your camera's set on indoor and you're using indoor lights, or it's set on exterior outdoor and you're using outdoor lights. It's just one of those advanced things. So generally, most people set it on indoor lighting and get lights from a Home Depot or another place, and then you can do that. We can show you.
Speaking of Home Depot, let's talk about a cheaper setup. I mean,
all right.
These lights are professional grade things. And they do really well.
That's yours.
They do really well. But what if our audience wanted to make their own shows right away, mm-hmm. and they wanted to go to Home Depot to get a bunch of lights? Can they make anything close to this?
They can. And let's do that right now.
Cool.
Let's keep Tom in this spot, and then I'll get a couple pieces.
Stay. Now, how much does this professional setup cost?
This setup right now with Tom, there's a key light that's about $1,000. And the backlights each are about $100
each. Whoa, that one light's $1,000?
The reason for that is because it has a built-in dimmer, it has a built-in ballast, it has built-in remote control capability if we ever were going to grow and he wanted to build this into a bigger studio. There's just a lot of bells and whistles that are helpful, and it's very specific color temperature bulbs so that he can dim it up and down and you're not going to have a massive shift. It's just making it easier for Tom to be able to operate his own studio.
All right, that's pretty pricey, but we can do this with some pretty cheap gear from Home
Depot.
Yes,
we can.
You've got, I think this is going to be a new key light.
I went shopping at Home Depot for a shop light, and then these are standard, what are called cool white, right?
So okay.
The downside to something like this, this is about $35 for the bulbs and then the lamp itself.
This is a workshop light you can get at Home Depot as well.
That's it. And then...
Or other hardware store.
And it's just going to be a simple pull chain. The issue that some people are going to find out immediately, so there's a little bit of flickering bulb until they warm up. As long as your shutter on the camera matches the power supply, so your camera needs to be set to 1/60th of a second. That'll be in a shutter menu, and some cameras are not manual like that, but pretty much all of them use that as a base.
Okay, and for the backlight, I'm going to be using a clip light that's around $20 because of the CFL and the clip. Let's actually just show what this looks like. We got Tom's shot with his correct lights. We're going to turn those off.
Yep.
We're going to replace them with our under $100 setup, and we're going to see what that looks like.
It's like $50.
Around $50.
But if we doubled up on the backlights, then we'd be back closer to 100. But yes.
We can modify as necessary.
Under $100.
Let's mess around with this whole setup.
So why don't you turn off his backlight, and then let's look at what's going to happen to his main light. There we go. So he's backlights in the dark.
Off.
And why don't you turn on your clip light and give him a new backlight.
Now, obviously, to hire me every day as the clip light holder.
Why don't you come closer here.
I'm a little bit more expensive than this.
And then get out of his shot. If you're able to stand over here, that's good. So now he's got a hair light, right? Now let's turn off his actual key light. And
get the lights.
There we go. Now let's turn on our $35 to $40 light. And so what happens here is I'm getting about the same angle. Now what's happening in Tom's camera is that you're having color shift.
He looks a bit ghostly white or something odd there.
Because the camera setting we used before was set for indoor lighting. So I'm going to switch the camera setting right now. Let's take these down for a second.
So we can mess with the camera settings to match the light sources because the light sources have different temperatures, but we can just dive into the settings of the camera.
You got that, Ayaz?
Let's do this again, okay?
We don't have a backlight, but I'm looking at Tom in this camera, and I'm going to switch his camera to a fluorescent setting. Any camera is going to have a basic fluorescent setting, or you do a manual. So now you want to go in close to him, and now let's switch places. So you go in close to him. Why don't you get even closer, right about here? And then I'm going to go in with the backlight. And now we should be a little bit closer to a look for Tom. You could choose to do things like have a toppy backlight. You can be more sidey. This is called a scratch light where it's like, you know, kind of scratch on the cheek. But this also hits the lens directly. So being an up and out, this is just kind of a standard deal here. But so, this right here is a decent option. You're not going to have a perfect color temperature, you're not going to have a perfect setup, but you can get a lot of mileage out of it.
I mean, think of the alternative. We've seen enough people with giant windows behind them.
Yeah, why don't you back off a little on that one?
We've seen people trying to light themselves with just like a desk lamp. This setup is really not that expensive, and you can get somewhat of a good look for a very low cost. Now, granted, if you have a crazy budget, you can get these awesome lights, but these ones can do pretty well if you got a camera that can get some settings like a manual white balance.
And even more so, you're going to get, we're a little bit on an orangey shift on this camera setting, but every camera will have a manual white balance. And so you hold a white piece of paper in front of the camera, it completely covers it, and you hit the manual white balance button, and it will say internally, this piece of paper is now a white point, and then it'll take out any serious crazy shift from blue to orange or any other.
Yeah, well, you don't need to stand. Colors. I can't hold like this. The lactic acid building
right,
in my shoulders.
You know,
I'm a host. I'm not an actual stand, unfortunately.
Why don't we switch back to one of our other setups? So this is kind of good. Right
sure.
Here. There we go.
Your mission. Oh, wow. Very, very nice. It's like we've got St. Thomas.
The new Pope. So I has another option is multiple sources. You know, this is one, diffusion is extremely important. The diffusion unifies multiple light sources. And so what that's going to look like in Tom's active camera is going to be, this is off to the side a little bit, but it's still a nice looking image. A little bit hot, and it's not exactly the right color temperature. But we can fix that with camera settings or white balance. Or I can turn off some of the lights to take down some of the intensity, and that'll normalize the intensity. Of course, the color is still up. But the point being that there are multiple light sources here. These are only a couple dollars each. You know, you got $10 per lamp. But as you add multiple light sources, that's how you can start to compete with brighter light. If you have a window just directly behind you, you can keep adding lights into one unified lighting source, because we have four lamps, but they become one when we take a piece of diffusion and uniformly spread out that light.
Let's talk about that actual stand. Is that actually a mic stand that you've modified by adding four clip lights?
It was.
That's what you're using to hold up these lights.
I had an extra mic stand. I had a friend who was shooting in front of a window, and she was a silhouette, and I said, we got to help you out. So we went and spent, I don't know, $60-$70. Four lights and one thing, and it completely competes with what the bulbs that are in there are daylight balanced CFLs. So a CFL has a lot higher output than an equivalent incandescent. It's not going to blow out as quickly. And it's a daylight balanced color temperature.
And so, you've taped a surge protector down there to keep everything powered. You got one switch for all of them if you want. And, and each of these clip lights has their own on off switch, as you were showing before.
So, Tom, thanks very much. This is our little Frankenstein rig, the little close-up, but it's as easy as that. You can do so much with diffusion is key, and then multiple light sources are a single source when they go through diffusion.
Now, this material here, if I wanted to go buy it at Amazon or B&H, what do you call this? You keep calling it diffusion material. Does it have a name?
Diffusion.
It's called diffusion? Yeah. So if I just search for diffusion, it'll pop up?
It's part of gel.
Okay.
Gels, people think colors, but it's a gel material. So it's called diffusion gel, and it's just called white diffusion. The half white diffusion, full white diffusion, and quarter white diffusion are the most common. Most often I use 250 is the number. 250 is half white density diffusion.
If you want to go with something like this setup, this really cheap setup, what material is this? This is a 250?
That's 250, half white diffusion. You could use something like tracing paper from a large tracing tablet from an art supply store, something like that. Do not use that with anything incandescent.
Yeah, I think that would burn.
Slightly flammable.
You don't do that with halogens or big work lamps, I'd imagine.
More often, the film industry uses this is an open frame, and there's 18 by 24 inch, there's 3 foot by 2 foot, there's 4 foot by 4 foot. This frame allows a light to then, this becomes the last source of light, right? So you can put multiple clips through something like this. Mm-hmm. You can make your own frame. You can use a window screen that was cut and taped to that. And then after that, the most important other thing is controlling light. Once you set up a nice, super big soft light of some sort, it's just going to go everywhere.
Right, it's going to spill everywhere. So this.
So sometimes with black wrap, this is called cinefoil or black wrap. It's spray painted
cinefoil,
thick gauge tinfoil, but it's actually thicker and more pliable. And you can do things like, put it on top, and that would block light from going up into something else.
Like a barn door kind of deal?
Yeah, it's essentially, it replaces something like that. But you would consider your light control, because the more light sources you add and the larger your soft diffusion source becomes, it's going to go everywhere. So if you're that meticulous, you want to control the light, then consider, as you add light, you also may want to control it. But that's some advanced techniques.
So people shouldn't skimp on the diffusion material.
Yeah.
You could probably figure something. You could probably make this yourself if you wanted.
Cardboard, paper, yeah.
And
something
then a blocks
like that.
Light you could use.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's really good to know.
Yeah. Diffusion is key, though.
So now we know how to set up this thing. If we had thousands of dollars, we had just a low budget.
Mm-hmm.
Brent, thanks a lot. That was
no
fantastic.
Problem. Absolutely. Back to them, then.
We'd like to thank Tom and Brent for all of their great input. So much work went into that studio. If you guys have any questions or comments, or you're curious about, hey, what did we talk about in this episode, check out twit.tv/KH. If you've got comments, questions, or concerns, give us an email, knowhow@twit.tv, Or if you're feeling like Google Plus, go to gplus.to/twitkh and you can join our community. There's over 3,000 of you guys. And again, everything's available at twit.tv/kh if you missed the live recording.